101.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. And it is time for the Kenai Conversation. I'm Jenny Nyman, and I am here with a palate cleanser this week. We've been doing our civic duty here at KDLL for the last month and doing election coverage on Kenai Conversation. So today, I see this as a fun topic. It can be a super stressful topic if you're the one in charge of making this happen. But we are talking about philanthropy today, giving and ways to support your community. So if you're on the organizing, the fundraiser end of things, it can make you want to pull your hair out. But for people who donate and give, you know, you're kind of giving yourself a gift too, because it can be really fun and make you feel really good to support your community. So I've got two guests here today that both have really interesting programs that they started in the community that's kind of a little divergent from the normal, I guess, or expected model of fundraising. So we've got Rhonda McCormick. Thanks for being here, Rhonda.
Thanks for having me.
So Rhonda started the Cash Mob, which we're going to talk about in a second. And we've also got Tammy Murray. Thanks for being here, Tammy.
Thank you, Jenny.
And Tammy started a local chapter of 100 Women Who Care. We're going to get into that as well. But just for introduction's sake, I mean, a lot of people know you both in the community, but your experience with fundraising in particular. So Tammy, you've had a lot of it as the designated person that was in charge of that. You were the development director for the Watershed Forum, and then the Chamber, and then T200. So can you just give us a little bit of background about how you got into fundraising and all the various hats that you've worn over the years?
That's a great question. I don't even know how I got into it, Jenny. But yeah, like 11 years ago, I started working at the Soldotna Chamber. And David Wharton B., who we all know and love, approached me about being the executive director of the T200, which they never had before. And so I said, oh, yeah, I'll take a look at that. And so they hired me, and then it was very apparent that they could not afford to hire somebody to run that race. So I moved off of that position and just became the president and organizer. So I did that for like 11 years. So that's way different than any other fundraising I do in the community, but that's why it's so much fun, is the difference in what we do. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I started with that and then stayed with the Chamber, and then they have all their events, obviously, that we do.
Yep, Chamber is an event machine. Yes. That's largely how they raise money.
Yep, exactly. And Pie Auction is coming up for anyone that wants to go. But yeah, so that I was there for like 8 years, 7 years, and then moved over to the Watershed Forum, which I loved as well. They were already a well-oiled machine, so it was just basically stepping in and carrying the projects they already had and the programs they already had and tweaking a few ideas here and there. So that was probably the easiest job I've ever had fundraising. The times are different, for sure, so fundraising in this climate is not as easy as it used to be.
Right.
You know, the oil companies are gone, and we sort of stood on their shoulders for quite some time. Although, you know, there's a few locals here. Marathon is still very generous. ConocoPhillips, even though they're not down here, they still support us because they have employees that live down here. Mm-hmm. So they support. If you ask, you know, you got to get out there and ask. And a lot of times that's the hardest thing for a lot of people to do, is just to ask.
Yep.
For me, it's not hard because I'm okay with a no. But until you tell me no, I'm going to keep asking.
And Rhonda, how about you? I know that you don't technically work in development. That's not been a hat that you're more in the accounting, business management end of things at the Watershed Forum. Although, since Tammy's departure, I understand there's a reshuffling of other duties as assigned. But you've been, you know, on the board of directors for nonprofits. You've volunteered for a lot of organizations. So what's your experience in fundraising?
Well, I think it all started when I was young and volunteering with my family at various events in the community. And then when I worked at Cook Inlet Academy for 8 years, and that was my first toe dipping into working for a nonprofit and seeing how an organization exists off of the generosity of others. So we did some fundraising there, which was my introduction to formal fundraising. And then I started working at the Watershed Forum and was able to learn from the very capable, incredibly talented Jocelyn O'Connor, who was just exceptional at what she did. And she taught me a lot about development. And so when she left our organization, I took on some of those duties temporarily And then as Tammy has left our organization, I've taken on some of those again. We've kind of spread some of those out. And it just really gives you the opportunity to touch base with people in the community and different organizations, small business owners. We have so many small business owners in our area. And then I'm also on the board of hospice. And so we, of course, also do fundraising as we're a nonprofit. And so it just really requires the support of a lot of people with their time as volunteers. That's so valuable. And people, a lot of people think they can only give money, but you can give time to an organization,
absolutely,
which helps tremendously, as well as dollars. They need the money. And if you invest in your organization with time, I believe you should also invest with some money.
Okay. So that's your guys' background. And I, a little later in the hour, I'm kind of curious about your thoughts of what you think gets you over the hump to donate, you know, for the first time. But in the meantime, I would love to hear about the two programs that you guys started. So Tammy, tell us about 100 Women Who Care.
So back in, I think it was 2017, I was approached by some ladies in Anchorage that had a program up there. It's 100 Women Who Care. Simple concept. 100 women get together. Three people pitch an idea, a nonprofit that would be awarded, and then every woman in the room would write a check to that organization. So they pitched me that idea. I said, oh, man, our community can totally support that, you know. So a few of us got together, tossed it around, and it took about a year for us to really make it happen. It was when I went to the Watershed Forum that I thought, okay, this is it. We're going to start this now. So we did. We started it up here in Soldotna Kenai, and then we started one in Homer. The organization's been around for a long time, the 100 Women Who Care. It was a lady back in Michigan who heard this need for these cribs, this program, these women that were bringing babies home. They didn't have cribs. They were putting them in boxes and, you know, didn't have the essential things they needed. So she's like, oh, I'm going to raise some money for these folks. And she thought, I can get 10 people to give me $1,000 pretty easily. But then she thought, oh, I'm going to get 100 people, 100 of my friends to give me $100. And so she actually ended up getting $12,000 in her first meeting. So 120 women gave $100, and then that's where it began. So now there's over 350 100 Women Who Care. There's 8 in Alaska now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're all over. They're in Anchorage, Kodiak, Fairbanks, Matsu Valley, Homer, Soldotna Kenai, and Juneau. So it's pretty exciting to see. Our group, we started in 18. We have given to 15 different charities. So we meet once a quarter. Let me back up a little bit. We meet once a quarter. The women come to the meeting. You're pledging to give $400 a year, $100 every 3 months. And you have to give to the charity that the group chooses. And at each meeting, we have three women that are chosen to pitch their cause. Those three women get up, they talk about who they want us to support. Then we have a secret vote on who the group wants to support, and the winning vote getter gets the money from that quarter. And then we try to keep it really simple for everybody involved. There's no board, there's no committee. It's just basically me, a couple of people volunteering at the meeting, and then the nonprofits that are awarded. So what happens, and Jenny, you've done this, we award the nonprofit. We give them a spreadsheet of all the members. As the funds start coming in, they just check it off, keep track for us so we know who's paid and who hasn't, and then we'll start pressuring a little bit if we have to. If they haven't paid their $100, we send them an email. Then we have the next meeting. So, I mean, it's really, really easy for everybody. The only obligation for the nonprofit that's awarded is that they track those funds, they keep that spreadsheet up to date, and then they have to put the next meeting on. So right now it's tough because we are meeting via Zoom. But if we meet in person, that nonprofit would select a location, have a couple volunteers there to receive people and check people off as they come in, kind of run the meeting. And that's all they have to do. And then they're to send a thank you note or receipt to whoever, you know, donates to them. But they're not to solicit. They're not to approach people unless that person says, hey, I want to be a member, so go ahead and send me information. Because we are giving them, you know, everybody's email and address so that they can communicate their thanks. But That's one of the other parts that the women like, is that we're not being solicited by every nonprofit. We've been we've had 43 nonprofits pitch at these meetings so far, and all of them have been respectful to everybody. Unless they want to be approached, you know, they're not pushing anything on their on our members.
Right. So the participants in 100 Women Who Care, they're not suddenly on a new mailing list for a new nonprofit every exactly. quarter that they're going to get, you yeah. know, the letters and the emails and the stuff. Hey, our yeah. new fundraiser is whatever it is.
Yeah. So we've raised over $97,000. All of it.
Stayed, that much. Yeah, wow.
All of it stays in our community. That's another part of the rules, is it has to be a nonprofit that's here. It has to be a 501c3, so it's tax deductible. If you're not, we can go through Bridges. And do it that way, but it's not really liked by the group. I think they want the 100% of those dollars to go to that nonprofit. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of where it's been trending. There's only a couple that have pitched more than once that haven't won. There's several that did pitch 2-3 times, mm-hmm. and by the third time they did get the award. There's several that just pitched once. And I am amazed, and I'm sure Rhonda can agree, of the number of nonprofits that I had never heard of
yep.
that were pitched at a meeting. It's shocking to me.
That's been one of my favorite things about that program. Or brand new nonprofits that are just starting up. And so you pitch at one of these, and the goal is to get 100 participant women. So every nonprofit that's awarded gets $10,000. We're not quite at that level yet, but it's still, you know, 7,000, 8,000, 9,000, depending on participation at that moment. Mm-hmm. And that is such a huge boost for a smaller organization, for a new organization, to just have that come in without having to spend all the time on doing that fundraising yourself. Is just such a huge benefit to especially some of these smaller and new organizations in
yeah,
the area.
Yeah, it's really rewarding to the women, too. You see that if you're in the room, Zoom is great, too, but in the room, when it's happening, it feels so good. I mean, I look forward to the meetings. I really love seeing all the ladies. I love hearing the pitches. I've never pitched. I've thought about it many times because I have a couple that I am passionate about as well. But as soon as I see the women come in, I'm like, okay. And I see who's putting their name in. I'm like, okay, they're worthy. They, you know, I want them to win, you know. So I've never pitched. I'm not sure I ever will, because I'm happy with who's getting the funding. So, but yeah, it's so rewarding. So rewarding.
And Rhonda, you've pitched at one of these before, and you're also the timekeeper extraordinaire. So the other nice thing I will say about these meetings, you are never more than an hour. Yeah. The actual time commitment for the participants is, you know, 4 hours at most a year, just attending these meetings. You guys run a tight ship. It is not a lot of extraneous stuff going on. You show up, you sign in, you put your name in the hat if you want to pitch, pick up your little chip to do the voting, chit chat for a couple minutes until the crowd is there, and then you guys keep everyone on task incredibly well. So that's kind of a nice part of it too. But Rhonda, what was your experience on the pitching end of 100 Women Who Care?
Well, I pitched at our second meeting, I believe, and it was very emotional for me, but it was so rewarding to have the nonprofit.
So you pitched for hospice, which, of course, if anyone has ever needed the services of hospice, feels very strongly about hospice and very personally about hospice. And I think that alone absolutely resonated with the women who were there that night.
Yeah, it's an important organization in our community, and I'm on their board, so I definitely am passionate about what they do.
Yeah, so they do some fundraisers in the community. I think there's the root beer run is a hospice one, right?
Yep,
and there used to be like a wine dinner or something.
Yeah, so the root beer run is a fairly recent. I think this is our fourth root beer run, and it's really a family event, and it's focused on kids. It's the only kids run that I know about locally. It's well appreciated, and every runner gets a free root beer from Kenai River Brewing as they help sponsor our event, which is fantastic. But the long-standing fundraiser for hospice is the wine event.
Which is a little tough these days.
It's typically in February, and we were not able to hold our event last year. And so we did a different kind of campaign where we did what we call a direct-to-ask campaign, where we went to some of our reputable donors or our longtime supporters and ask them to support our organization as if they had come to the event. And that was very successful. We are actually meeting tomorrow night to discuss what to do this year, because with the COVID numbers so high, we are not sure it's a great idea to get a bunch of people together mm-hmm. in a room. And on top of that, a lot of our longtime supporters are people that work in the medical field, mm-hmm. and we don't think they're going to want to come sit together in a room. So we're discussing if we want to do another direct ask campaign, or if we should move our event, or, you know, there's so many unknowns. It's just really difficult to try and plan a fundraiser yep. during this time that we're experiencing.
Yeah, I think any nonprofit that has any sort of in-person event is going through the same thing right now. Yeah. KDLL, for the last 2 years, we've canceled all of our in-person everything. I mean, all of our programmatic stuff that we used to do and fundraisers that we used to do, just because, to start off with, no one knew how to hold a safe event, right? So, and no one wants to have responsibility for
massive outbreak.
Yeah, for somebody getting sick. And then, you know, there's, in some parts of the country, there's, you know, events again that, well, we're going to require everyone who comes to be vaccinated or to wear masks or whatever the case may be. But it's become such a hot button issue that who wants to make their volunteers be the ones to, like, police that at the door is kind of difficult to wrap your heads around, too. So, you know, in some places in the lower 48, you can hold an outdoor event, which is probably a lot safer. In Alaska, in the fall and in the winter, it gets a little challenging to try and get people to come to outdoor events. So, yeah, the food bank had to cancel their in-person soup supper and tried to do that online, which, you know, was somewhat successful for them, but I don't think as much as the in-person soup supper usually is. So events right now are really challenging.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of the organizations that normally have dinner auction type things, they have tried to do some online auction, you know, kind of recreate the event as an mm-hmm. online auction. It's just not the same as mm-hmm. being in a room where people are bidding against each other and you have bidding wars and you have that excitement and anticipation. And so that's been a real challenge. And the Watershed Forum also has had to cancel all of our mm-hmm. in-person events, as small as our Christmas open house, all the way up to the Kenai River Festival, which yep. we've canceled twice. And it's a very difficult decision, and people don't realize how far ahead of time you have to make that decision. We are talking about next summer's River Festival now. Mm-hmm. Now is when we start organizing. It's almost a year in advance. And so you have to try and predict a year in advance what our society is going to be like with this crazy pandemic. So it's a challenge.
Yeah. And when you're doing events, there's costs involved in that, right? And
absolutely.
And the goal is to try and keep your costs to hold the event as low as possible so that, you know, you maximize whatever revenue. But it's very much a balance. You know, and time is money, too, especially if you're devoting staff time to a fundraising event. That's very much still money. Hopefully you get as many volunteers as possible to put on an event. But to invest that much in actual costs of supplies and rentals and whatever you need to put on an event, and then staff time to do that under the model of, well, we'll just wait until the day before and then call it then. Like, you just can't do that. And so if you're not going to hold an event, what are you going to do to try and raise money? And that's where I think, like, 100 Women Who Care, Salteshi Trails Association, and KDLL have both benefited from that. So I can speak from both of those hats that, oh my gosh, what a amazing relief it was to have an influx of support from the community without having to beat your head against the wall of trying to figure out how in the heck to hold a fundraiser these days.
Yeah, you're right, Jenny. And I know with you guys, with Salteshi too, there was a lot of women didn't really know a lot about the trails. Mm-hmm. Everybody thinks, oh, they're so well funded. But, you know, there's things they need. There's things that they can't get without our help. So a lot of the women were very excited about Salteshi winning, KDLL especially, because of the timing when that was happening.
Yeah, we got our name drawn and pitch right after the state, you know, was going through all their cycles of budget cuts, including all cuts to public media funding in the state. So suddenly a $73,000 hole in our budget with no warning. So having that influx from 100 women was really helpful.
And I think one key factor that a lot of people don't know, Tammy made me think of this, is the fantastic thing about 100 Women Who Care funds coming in is it's unrestricted funds.
Yes.
So it's not designated or restricted. So the nonprofit can use it for match, and they can use it to pay for anything they want. There's no restriction on what they can use with those funds. Mm-hmm. And so it is so, so well deserved for nonprofits to be able to use these funds that come in with no strings attached. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's something that if you haven't been involved in a nonprofit, if you haven't worked for one or been on the board or, you know, known someone that has done that, you might not realize how carefully you have to spend money, especially grants. That's the big one. Grants rarely, if ever, and if someone knows of some grants that just give you operational funding, please call me and let me know, because that's the holy grail. But grants are usually for a specific program or to buy a piece of equipment or to do a very specific thing. It can't just be, you know, to pay the electric bill or to pay your staff or whatever. So to have funding that you can use for whatever happens to come up in a year, I mean, you know, boards of directors put a lot of time into trying to foresee what's going to come up in the next year's budget, but things happen and you never know. And COVID has definitely taught us all that having an emergency fund or having a way to get some extra cash during the year to cover costs when you're suddenly in a challenging environment that you have no control over and had no crystal ball about is incredibly important. So that's why local fundraising in particular is, you know, event fundraising and 100 Women Who Care and things like that is incredibly impactful for organizations because it is unrestricted funds, and that's tough to come by in the nonprofit world.
Yeah, and Rhonda, you made me think of something. I know we're going to get to this, ideas of what we can do, other things besides events. And Rhonda did this at the hospice. It was her 30-year anniversary where she challenged people to bring in, was it 30 donors at a certain amount of money? And I think simple things like that can reach a lot of people that could only give $30 or, mm-hmm. you know, so those kinds of programs, I think maybe we'll see more of.
Yeah, and I think that's where social media has been really helpful in fundraising, because you can spread the word a little more easily than maybe we used to be able to with just hanging up posters around town and buying ads. And if you only have a way to reach your people, then you're kind of preaching to the choir, which is great because they're likely to support you, but it's tougher to get the word out to people who maybe don't know you exist or don't know what the needs are. So social media, I think, gives people the opportunity, like all these GoFundMe mm-hmm. accounts and the birthday fundraisers that you see on Facebook all the time, to for people who care passionately about an organization to make a lower level ask of their, you know, specific friends, like, hey, I would love it if instead of you guys buying me a whatever, yet another scarf or whatever it is, like, you know, donate $20 to this organization. That's what I would like for my birthday. Like, that kind of thing didn't used to be possible before social media. Not that social media doesn't have some challenges and ills along with it. It can be tough to, like, vet some of these things. But it has opened a door, I think, to more person to person and smaller amounts from larger numbers of people to support organizations.
And I think that's a critical point too, is a lot of people think that if they're going to donate to a nonprofit, they have to have hundreds of dollars. And you can give $20 to mm-hmm. a nonprofit and they will appreciate it. Because if a lot of people gave $20, that really adds up. And I saw a post on Facebook the other day about a woman that was making something and she was going to donate part of the proceeds or $10 from everything. And someone commented and said, I bet the nonprofit, they're not even going to want your $10. It's not enough. And I commented and said, no, any dollar that is given to a nonprofit is appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
Every single dollar. And so if you have $20 and you're passionate about something, find a nonprofit that supports that and give them $20 and they will love it.
Yep. A lot of nonprofits can use that to leverage for other giving as well. So the $20 is $20, which if you're in the nonprofit realm, $20 is a pretty useful amount of money. But in a lot of cases, you can then go to grants or other larger sources of funding and say, hey, you know, we have X number of people locally who support us. Even if 100 of them only gave you $20, you can still make the case that we are important in our community. A lot of people care enough about us to reach into their own pocketbook, whether it was $200, $2,000, or $20, and say, our community cares about our cause. So if you can care about our cause, you're going to be supporting something that is important in our area. So yeah, even small donations can have a pretty outsized impact. But how to get someone to do that first $20 donation or whatever that amount is can be kind of challenging, which, and we need to get to Cash Mob here in a minute, Rhonda, but the thing that really interests me in both of these organizations is you're not selling a particular cause. You know, I think a lot of charity, a lot of donations, a lot of fundraising is, you know, the food bank is raising money for the food bank, or hospice is raising money for hospice, or KDLL is raising money for KDLL. But both of your programs, the ask that you're making of people who are giving is, hey, just come participate in support for your community. And the people who are donating don't even know specifically what, you know, the end receivers of that money is going to be. To me, that's a really interesting, different take on philanthropy. It's kind of the United Way model, which doesn't operate around here anymore because that, you know, model changed. But to do it on such a grassroots, hey, come participate in supporting your organization and not, you know, the food bank for the food bank or Boys and Girls Club for the Boys and Girls Club. Have you guys found that to be an easy sell to people, or have you had to convince, has like the not knowing what their money was going to go to every single time, has that been a challenge for anyone, or are people pretty open to like, yes, I want to support my community?
Most are pretty open. We've only had a couple that didn't like the charity that was awarded. We signed an agreement saying we're going to pay $100 to whoever wins. We had a couple ladies that didn't like the charity, so they ended up giving money to another $100 to the previous charity or another $100 to the next quarter's charity, which we don't, it's not part of the rules, but they're still giving, so that's acceptable. They're all fine with it. They join the group knowing that they're gonna donate $400 a year to charities in our community. Our numbers have been wavering. We're up and down quite a bit, and I think that's just the economy that we're in right now, which sort of worries me because, you know, not only is the economy down, people are out of work, so those people can't donate. So it's just this trickle-down theory that, you know, everybody's touched by. So once we get back on track, things will hopefully get back to normal. We'll see those numbers go back to where they should be. And then some of the money that is awarded in grants and stuff is specifically for, like, environmental kind of got passed over, I think. I mean, there's still the grants that are always there, but there's some other funding that, okay, we're going to push all this to education or all this to medical.
Right, yep.
Skip environmental for a year or two, and then, you know, we'll look at that later. But so that was worrisome too, Rhonda. I'm sure you guys felt that a little bit last year or the year before, but that it's worrisome to me. But like you said, these small grassroots ideas are going to fill in some of the gaps that we're seeing.
Yeah, I think that's maybe an outgrowth or related to anyway, the GoFundMes and the Facebook birthday fundraisers. I think it's just empowering people to become fundraisers on their own without, you know, working for an organization or being on a board of an organization, but just giving people the idea that, hey, if you care about a thing in your community or a cause or whatever it is, there is a way that you yourself can stand up your own pretty effective way to raise funds for that organization.
Well, and here's the pitch for 100 Women Who Care is, you know, you come and you have to spend $100 and people say, well, I don't have $100. Well, we meet every quarter. If you can put $33 a month aside, you can participate in 100 Women Who Care and be a part of that $91,000 that's been given away in our community. Mm-hmm. It's very doable, even for people who are on lower income scale. I've been on lower income scale, so I can claim to have experience there.
Yeah, that's, you know, maybe skip a coffee a week or so, and
exactly,
you have that amount of money that you can, you know, especially contribute to something that by the nature of that program is just, you know, multiplying your impact that you can have is a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, it's very cool.
All right, so we are getting up to the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a quick break and then be back with Tammy Murray and Rhonda McCormick talking about philanthropy, giving, 100 Women Who Care, and we are definitely getting to Cash Mob right after this break. This is KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. I'm Jenny Nyman, and we will be right back.